Hey, everybody, I'm Jody Vance.
And I'm George Affleck.
And it is time for...
Check. Ooh, check. I am...
What time is it in your head, George?
It's 7 hours ahead. No, behind ahead. So it's like 7 o'clock at night, but you know, I didn't sleep much last night. So I got back yesterday
from
UK via Morocco, via UK. Yeah. So did a little tour.
I was following along on your lovely Better Haps.
Yes.
Social media.
I never post anything.
It looked life-changingly cool.
It's pretty cool. I mean, for those who don't know, I went to Morocco with my friend. We're all turning old ages. And so it's one of the big birthdays. And so we have this rule, as you get older, if somebody arranges something and they invite you, you have to go.
And oh, I like that.
What? Yeah. And so he arranged this trip to Morocco with 10 of us. And so we had to go and couldn't afford it. Don't have time. Had to figure out how to deal with Quinn, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we figured it out. And yeah, it was pretty amazing. It was pretty go, because it was a tour and you kind of stopped in all these places and did the Sahara and did the Casablanca and Marrakesh and Fez. And so it was very interesting. The roads were amazing. They're planning for several things. I think there's a big African Cup coming and I think the World Cup or I don't know, me and sports, a bunch of sports things are coming. We talk about this a lot actually on the show about infrastructure. Why?
Yeah.
If you hate sports, but why big events like Olympics and stuff make a difference? Because this is the perfect example. The roads, the king of Morocco, who it's basically it's a constitutional monarchy without a lot of democracy. He just said, let's get this done. And they basically paved all the roads around the entire country. And so it was very, very easy to travel. And people were lovely and it was very interesting, as you might imagine.
I'm living vicariously through your, like I said, your stories and the social media that Amanda put out there. Cause it does look like, sometimes we get so deep into our silos here, and everything we go Canada, then we go BC, then we go Metro Vancouver and even, dialed into Park Board or whatever it is. And then you get to a far flung place. And I mean, Casablanca, do you come back here and, flip on talk radio or, look at a local newspaper online, of course, and say, wow, or what do you say? Do you say, wow, I'm so glad to be home. It's good to get away, but it's always good to come back. Or is it like, wow, we could learn something from where I was, or a little bit of both?
Of all the gin joints and all the places and all, that's what I say about going to Casablanca. It's very enlightening. It's a country that's trying to progress. Our tour guide was a woman. She's the first woman who's ever been a tour guide for this company that we were with. Big deal. The king is who has oversight, much more. Well, as I said, it's a constitutional monarchy, but the king has a lot more power than say our king does. So he's been very progressive for women, and she was very clear about that. It's very happy about her situation, that she was able to do her dream job. She was fully had to wear the usual garb that you have to wear in those countries, and so it was challenging. She actually had to stop at one point because it was also Ramadan, so she couldn't eat or drink water or anything for the entire
sun up to sundown. Yeah.
So that was she had one heat stroke briefly that she had to break fast to be able to deal with that, which you're allowed to do if you're having problems. Her heartbeat got so slow. So that was interesting to be there during that and all this other stuff, and to have this woman who was talking about her rights in a country where, comparatively speaking, still don't have a long way to go, but also remind you how quickly we can go backwards, as we talk about in the show on what's going on in the United States and some other places and women's rights. You can go backwards too, and sometimes. And so, her positivity about the future for women in her country was very interesting. And her passion for the monarchy that they have there was interesting, quite different than you're used to. And they're kind of, it's in the whole issue with what's going on. Tourism's been killed by what's going on in Israel. A lot of people make the assumption that even though this is Northwest Africa, that there's the same things, you know, that same problems are happening, but they're not, but it's hurt their tourism. They're a fully Muslim country. Like there are few Jewish people there. I think 40,000 Jewish people in all of Morocco, and then a few Christians here and there. So very, very, so it's just, everything was very interesting, and you feel the progress there while it's still very, somewhat third world, in a lot of places. You still see the progress happening, certainly in Marrakesh, which is a weird city because it's surrounded by a very high-end hotel, you know, Vegas-y kind of thing, although they have no alcohol and drugs in Morocco, except in the certain hotels. But then the center is this market, which is like crazy, going back to like 200 years, 300 years, 400, 500 years, and it's just chaos. Like you imagine a market to be, and it's yet surrounded by all these fancy hotels. So it's a very interesting experience.
Wow. And I saw them, like you said, about the garb, you know, you were dressed like George, but George in Morocco, you know. Now, do you have to wear that? Do you have to wear that? You add it because you're protecting yourself from the weather.
It was the desert. It was beautiful, but it was dry and sandy. Women shouldn't be showing any skin on your legs or arms. So there are two women with us, and there's eight guys. That's a whole other story. And so Amanda and Tracy, you know, had to wear pants the entire time. We did see some tourists there wearing short shorts. Women, and apparently it's quite an offensive thing to do in that country. So, but guys can wear shorts if you're a foreigner.
Interesting. So, well, back here at home.
Yes, what's happened? Besides Trump getting, being now the top, one of the richest people in the world while I left because of his Truth Social stock skyrocketing.
Isn't that wild? You can explain that. I mean, it went public, right?
Yeah, and 60% in one day up. So he's one of the top 500 richest people in the world now. So that's great. And he's, you know, but he can't cash in yet. So there's a timing issue for the 500 million he's got to come up with.
Well, now it's 164 million or something. It got reduced.
Oh, I missed that. So he's got no problem finding that money, I would say.
That's what the back and forth. But he's selling Bibles now for $60. He's hawking Bibles over Easter week. Yeah, that's the new thing. Ronna McDaniel was hired by MSNBC and NBC as a contributor.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody lost their ever-loving minds on air. Like Rachel Maddow went on for like 28 minutes about how this is ridiculous. She said something to the effect of, you don't hire the mobster to run the bank, and you don't hire the pickpocket to work for the TSA, you know. Or customs. There was that sort of drama that played out. It went, I think it was 2 days, might have been 48 hours, maybe a little bit less, and then they fired her.
Oh.
So that didn't last. So that happened while you were gone. Closer to home here, let's see what happened.
Well, I saw your tweet this morning about Trudeau.
I was going to get to that because there's like layers of it. There have been a couple of announcements. He did another announcement this morning about childcare. It's like housing and childcare. Hello, again, a re-announcement of an announcement. You can see that the election, you know, is coming down the pipe and the polls are saying what they're saying, but it was wild. The tweet this morning that you saw, you can explain.
Well, he announced several things related to rental housing, which is seems similar to what Vancouver announced a few years ago and what the provinces announced, which is, you know, sticks against owners who have renters. It's, you know, it's this whole policies that I you know, how I feel about sticks versus carrots, you know, whatever. But he did have one thing that I thought was interesting, which was changing the regulations on mortgage financing. And for those people who do rent, they should get credit for that. And I agree, that's a really good idea, because
that is a good idea.
I paid rent forever. I mean, I paid
forever
rent in my 30s.
Oh my gosh,
no value, that had no meaning to the banks. I'm like, why? I never missed a rent check in my life.
Ever.
And it, why would I not get credit for that? So I thought that was interesting and good, because coming from England, where they have, so I think I talked to this before I left, but so many different ways of financing housing. I was in London yesterday, 2 days ago. I saw three homeless people. Well, combined, Amanda and I, we were actually weren't together. She was walking around with her friend. I was walking around with my daughter who lives there now. And combined, we saw three homeless people, three in wow. all of London. And I walked for all day and I saw one and she saw two. So, but there, it's interesting. And I saw no, there was no people walking around either there or where Evelyn lives or in the south of England, wherever. I didn't see people wandering around like they do in Vancouver. You just didn't see it. And maybe they've hidden it. I don't know where, but you did not see it. And one of the things that I talk about with people there is the housing programs. They have so many different kinds of housing programs. You know, you have where you have a partnership with the government and they co-own a home with you and yeah. they pay half the mortgage and you pay half the mortgage. And once that's paid, then you can decide whether you want to buy it out or you sell it. All these different kinds of programs. I also believe they still have institutions for people who might have mental health care issues, which we got a lot, we got rid of in Canada and the United States in the 90s and 80s. So I think there are still systems in place that we in North America got rid of in the 80s and 90s that they didn't. And right. as a result, you just don't see the homelessness and drug issues.
I wonder what those institutions, sorry to interrupt you there, but I do wonder what those institutions look like and run like and are like for those who need the help. Are they getting the help or are they being, you know, institutionalized in a way that was the reasoning or the excuse or the reason used to divest ourselves of places like Riverview here? Because we just had actually you may or may not remember that the man who is suffering from a bipolar episode who had tried to, you know, present himself at the hospital and wanted to speak with a psychiatrist and then 2 days later ends up walking into a coffee shop and killing a 79-year-old man in Nanaimo, right? And so this was years ago, now his trial date, I think it was 2021, so his trial was yesterday and he was found not criminally responsible because he didn't have, right? So he is now at Colony Farm, which is where he's been since he murdered somebody, or allegedly, I don't even know how I'm supposed to properly state it, since that man tragically was killed at the coffee shop. You know, and I thought it was really interesting when I was listening to the news story and it's like, and he resides at Colony Farm. And I'm like, Colony Farm sounds friendly. You know what I mean? Riverview at one point sounded like it probably looks over a river, you know, it didn't have, what are we calling things in order to make them okay? Or are they okay places that we need to have in order to support those who cannot live, you know, in society in a meaningful way that protects them and the people around them? It's a really interesting conversation, I think, that that's ongoing, right? There's no immediate answer, but the more you walk around Vancouver, I mean, I'll see three homeless people and two of them will be, you know, slouched over and tripping and frozen, like in that, you know, using pose by walking down to the end of the block and back. Like it's so prevalent that people are in such need. And I don't say that like, wow, they're in my backyard. I say, wow, it just feels like it's getting worse by the day for those people, right? Not even to talk about the, you know, the knife wielding person who stabbed folks, you know, downtown Vancouver at 10 a.m. or the attack that happened in Stanley Park to the woman who was walking her dogs at 10 o'clock in the morning. You know, these things are, they're happening here. And the stats show that crime is not drastically increasing, but these incidences of sort of stranger interactions or people who will ultimately be found not criminally responsible for what they're doing, that's bringing it all the way back around. What is being done elsewhere?
And how do they ever get to that situation in the first place? Why are we letting them get to that situation where they go into a place and kill somebody? This is the ultimate question. And there is no one size fits all, but zero sizes for nobody is also not working. We're not looking at the whole picture here and we're not dealing with the whole picture. And you have three levels of government either ignoring it or fighting over it or announcing. I mean, the federal government, Trudeau announcing the thing today, which seems redundant to the stuff the province has. and that the city has. So we have three levels of government now announcing something similar to rental controls and rental restrictions about and rental and you know, punishing owners, this whole rent evictions thing. One of the things I have a challenge when you talk about, you know, this rent evictions is that there's probably, you know, in Vancouver, if you're tearing down a rental house, generally you have to replace it with more rental housing. So you have to displace some people to get more places. So now we're going to ban, so that, you know, just makes developers and anybody doing anything, ugh, what's the point? Like, it's just too complicated and I'm going to get punished for this, or I'm going to have to pay a whole bunch of money. The whole thing is broken, and no level of government, and they don't seem to talk to each other. There seems to be redundancies as usual. I mean, Downtown Eastside is the ultimate example. I mean, there's so many different organizations competing for the same audience and
piece of the pie.
Money.
Yeah.
To get
so the clip on my Twitter earlier today, it's so funny because everybody now just assumes that I'm a Pierre Poilievre fan, because I said the speech writers of this clearly have not been renters or something to that effect, because in the speech, it's like what we're trying to do is, you know, give the history of what the rent was in these units so that people who are renting them have the opportunity to bargain. And I'm thinking to myself, not in most of my adult life, actually never have I been able to bargain what my rent might be, like, to, unless I'm bargaining up, like to say, I'll give you an extra $150 if I can have my cat, you know, if that's the type of bargaining we're talking about, great. I don't see how that helps anybody. But that in the speech this morning, the prime minister used so that people can bargain. And I was like, what? That's just like hard stop.
It's a volume game. And if nobody wants to play the volume game, we have an example where we built these temporary modular housing units. And in Vancouver, in that first phase, I think it was 800 units in that first wave that were built within less than a year.
Yeah.
So what if the federal government got involved in that? And also, it all can't happen in one city. This is a national problem. And that's one thing I noticed in England, although it's a small country, it's like smaller than British Columbia and has 80 million people. So, you know, it's a whole different game, but,
yeah.
And you have one time zone, which helps too. The thing is though, that they do share the pain across certainly in the South. I can't speak much for the North of England, but certainly in London South, you sense that the facilities and the places people live and the social
amenities
everywhere. It's not just in one location. They don't do that there. And every house, every development built has to, as it does in Vancouver for the most part now, has to have 20% social housing. True social housing, not fake social housing.
True social housing, means tested, right? Like, I know people right this very second who live in co-ops who are strategically living their financial lives to keep their place.
Yeah.
Who don't need the leg up anymore. They just like where they live. And, you know, I get it. There's very little other place to go to, and moving is so stressful. So I come at this, I'd love to see more social housing all over my neighborhood. In Kitsilano, it used to be the center of social, like those little walk-ups, those, you know, the co-ops that would open into a courtyard that had a little fence and it would be filled with children's toys, right? And all the amenities in these places were like bamboo parquet, you know, avocado toilet and tub, and the teeny tiny, like, size of your dinner table was your kitchen. Like, it's just, but it works because it's what you need to get you to that place where you can get to the next level that opens it up. I loved my little 400 square foot studio apartment that I could barely turn around. I had to like stand beside the toilet to close the bathroom door. Like, it was tiny. I loved it because it was mine. It was mine. And it overlooked an alleyway, but I loved it anyway. I got to know the people who lived across the alley because our windows looked into one another. Like, there's something to be said for that. And people back then, nobody was scared of me as a, you know, young person working at a bar, going to culinary school, you know, trying to get her shit together. They didn't look at me like I was some bad thing to have in the neighborhood, right? Like, why do we look at renters now? Why do we look at social housing or people that need a lower cost place to live as somebody who devalues the neighborhood? I just don't think those two things.
Well, and if that is happening, or if people who rent are not treating their homes with respect, why?
Is that what it is? Yeah.
What's going on in their childhood and their upbringing? If that is actually true, if that's what people are mad about, oh, I don't want to rent my own, you know, I don't want our building to be a rental building because of renters or, you know, well, what happened? Why is there, if that's true, there's so many layers here that it's almost impossible. This sort of, it's an impossible situation. But I think that's why there has to be a national program partnered with the province and the cities to get things done. And I don't see that in a big way happening. There's just,
and address the rights of both, right? Address mm-hmm. the rights of the landlord and the rights of the renter.
Yes, of course. And brings nobody wants to be a landlord. If you don't, right? If you keep punishing landlords, then landlords are going to, well, screw it. I'm just going to put my, I'll invest in office space or retail space or whatever. Yeah. I'll put my money somewhere else. I mean, why would I put myself through this? Investors are what makes things get built. And if it's not coming from the government, it has to come from the private sector. And if you're going to keep punishing the private sector for investing in housing, and make them and give the renters complete autonomy over in a way that's like out of control, then you have a chance. Then, and maybe you think that's the right thing or wrong thing, but it does discourage people from building rental housing because they think, what's the point? It certainly discourages individuals from renting units. In my building, totally. Strata development, 80% yeah. of the units are rented. If suddenly the government's saying, you know, forget it. You got to, you're strict, and you know, these poor people who are renting these homes, whoever they are like, ugh, they'll sell. And guess what? You know, they'll sell them for whatever price. And it's not going to be a renter who buys them. It's going to be somebody who can afford to buy these places. God knows who these people are. I don't know anymore. I look at the prices, I'm going, and that's again a volume game, getting the prices down. Prices in the UK, again, are so much cheaper than
really?
Here. And yeah, sure. Not in London, but certainly right. outside, anywhere outside the city. And right. you see right. lots of construction happening everywhere. And this is
that's
a country
giving
in
me
recession.
That's giving me a little bit of hope as I am starting to see what I used to see in the past 5 to 10. It used to be cranes in Burnaby and cranes in Richmond and nothing in Vancouver. I'm starting right. to see the cranes. Right.
You're just starting to see where you live.
Yeah.
Sides.
Let's go. And a lot of them mm-hmm. are social housing. And I'm mm-hmm. really with NIMBYs losing their ever loving minds. And mm-hmm. I'm like, let's go. I miss the neighborhoods. I go over to Main Street and I'm like, Main Street looks like what West Broadway used to look like. Right.
Sure.
Many of and many of them the same. No, the businesses moved from here to there.
Yeah. That's like what I mean. Crazy. Activity as yeah. far as just people on the street, they're at coffee shops, they're at restaurants.
It's blooming. It's beautiful. It's, you know, because mm-hmm. people are going to the coffee shop, you know, with the stroller while the kid's napping to get the Wi-Fi to do the thing, get out for some fresh mm-hmm. air and do you know, up and down
yeah.
West Broadway, West 4th Avenue. It's just not like that. It's, mm-hmm. yeah, it's, anyway, I want to slide in one more thing. We only got four yes. minutes here because we both what? Have to go.
We had nothing to talk about today.
That's what we were going to cancel. Because you know, it's a tired, so tired. A carbon tax. Everybody's talking about the carbon tax that's coming in on April 1st on Monday. I can't get away from this subject, George. It's on the radio every time I flip it on. I'm going to be talking about it on Steel and Vance tonight for sure with Shachi Curl, because the Angus Reid Institute has done the polling on it. And, you know, Poliev and Rustad and conservative premiers and da da da. It's like, can you explain, George, if we should be out of our minds about this in a way that it makes it, you know, a bigger conversation than housing and affordability
yes,
and all
should
the things.
Be.
Okay, let's go.
If it's not revenue neutral like BC's was, Gordon Campbell brought it in, or revenue neutral, and Kim Campbell has gone against Poliev supporting what was the original concept of our carbon tax in BC, which is, you know, revenue neutral. So if you take a tax, you get a discount, you end up as a taxpayer or a business not paying more tax. You pay the same amount of tax, but the incentives and the program works so that it incents people to become environmentally responsible. NDP got rid of that. They now just turned it into a tax, right? And there's no win. I mean, you just tax. So, and then you go, well, where's the money going? There should be a direct, I have said this many times. I like to see if you're going to tax me, I want to know where that money's going. You know, if you're going to give me, you're going to take 10 bucks. Where's that 10 bucks going? How is that changing the situation? Otherwise you're just taxing me for general revenue. And frankly, with a bureaucracy and Ottawa and Vancouver that have gone up by 30% or more in the last 10 years, then, and Vancouver as well, forget it. I'm not paying for that. I'm not paying for more bureaucracy unless you can prove that you're doing something different or changing something, and certainly the environment, and that's where government really has to have a role. That's fine. So revenue neutral carbon tax, it was working great. The numbers are, we are proof that it was working. It was running perfectly. And then the NDP got in and they changed it and made it into a revenue generator and broke the system. And it just, it's disappointing. And that's what Polly is against. And the federal tax, we don't, the federal tax, because BC has its own carbon tax, is somewhat separate to that. So we don't have the same kind of issues here, but we have broken our tax. So therefore, to me, it's a tax grab. And I'm against it. I'm against tax grabs in general, if, unless you can justify it. And this has now become just a tax grab by the provinces and the federal government. And that's not on. Nope. Not into tax grabs. Thanks very much.
And the federal government saying it's not a tax grab. It's a Canada carbon rebate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's slightly different than BC's, but it's less transparent than BC's was. And right. So that's where you have to ask your questions about, okay, well, prove that this is going to make a difference. Show me the numbers. And ours was gradual. We built up ours with Campbell. It took several years to get to the point.
Where I remember.
The number. So he it was a very slowly graduated tax. And so didn't, you know, shock our system. We don't need something to shock our system in a negative way right now in the economy. As a business owner, believe me, and you're a business owner too, it ain't fun out there right now. It's not fun.
It really
to be a
isn't.
Business. People are not spending money right now, and they certainly aren't spending on the fringes like marketing and hiring people to be MCs and things like that, or even fill in hosts at radio stations. So everything's cut. And, you know, it's not a good time to be in business. It's very stressful, and anything you're going to do to hurt my opportunity to be a successful business person is not something I support. And so I think that's the issue that you're facing with this national carbon tax. It's not the right time when the economy's down.
And that's what I was going to say. So the alternative to this is something, because obviously something has to give when it comes to climate emergency, right? Like something's got to give. Is it, rather than incentivizing the taxpayer to become more carbon aware, or whatever we're calling it, environmentally aware, instead of going tax through the people, the taxpayer, could it not be more put onto the most egregious of the rule breakers? Like, that's the part that drives me a little bit bonkers, is because there are lots of people that are doing big business, big money business, that is having far greater impact than my little 1600 square feet home and my two plug-in hybrids.
Yeah, you know? Well, always the argument about your hybrid and, you know, electric cars is, where is that, the neutrality of that number? And where that power comes from, and how your car is built, yada, yada. If Canada really wants to make a difference on the environment and really impact the world, we have a thing, it's a Canadian shield. It's it's north, the most stable geography on Earth. It's the greatest place to put nuclear power plants on Earth. And Alberta already sees this. They're already pushing hard on nuclear power. If you want to bring down the carbon in our world, you got to go nuclear. I've said this since we started this podcast. You got to accept that nuclear power is the key to bring, in order for us to live the lives and to drive our cars and be the selfish people that we are, that we always will be, because we can't stop wars. How are we going to make everybody change their way they want to consume? And so what we have to focus on, and this is kind of what Elon Musk does, this is, you know, Microsoft, Bill Gates is a leader in the nuclear power industry. He's created a whole new way to power through nuclear power, mini micro units for nuclear power. Nobody wants them, though. Nobody wants to build them because everybody's afraid of
Three Mile Island.
The PR yep. of nuclear power. Yep. But it's changed so much since then. And if you look at places like the Northern Shield, up in northern Canada, along Saskatchewan, Alberta, Manitoba, this is the most stable geography. It's the best place to put nuclear power. It's easy to deal with the waste, all that kind of stuff, but nobody wants it. And if we were to do that, we could power the entire world from there.
Wow. See, this is why we have our conversations. We've gone over. That's it. You got to follow him. He's back, people. He's back. He's found on social media, Twitter, @George_. Affleck, at George underscore Affleck. I'm Jody Vance, Jody with a Y, at Jody Vance. I missed you, buddy.
Nice to be back.
Bye.